It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, Money for Lunch Nation, good to have you here. Man, it's exciting to have you guys back. This is kind of our weekend edition. This is our Friday show, and we're going to set you up to have a strong beginning instead of having a weak end. Get it? I know, it's sad, but sometimes that's the best I can do. Hey, I'm not a comedian. All right, we're going to get this party started right away with Barbara Mystic. Don't you just love that? Barbara Mystic. Barbara Mystic, I was talking to her right before the show. She's freezing her butt off in New York. And Barbara Mystic is also the president of Wilson College. She's a seasoned entrepreneur and was named a distinguished service professor at Carnegie Mellon University. Her public service advocacy on behalf of entrepreneurs has won numerous awards from the U.S. Small Business Administration, Ernst & Young, the Girl Scout of America, the Girl Scouts of America. Dr. Mystic was the first woman to serve as president of the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. You can learn more about Barbara and her book, Stretched, at thestretchpartners.com. Dr. Barbara Mystic, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert. Good to be with you.
Man, I'm excited to have you here. And hopefully you
thank
can
you, and I hope some of that warmth that's coming from Arizona comes my direction. Thank you, Bert.
I was about to say the same thing. Hopefully, you know. All right, so let's talk about this. First of all, tell us, what inspired the book, Stretch?
Well, Bert, it all started with a big survey that we did with SAP and Oxford Economics, where we sort of looked at workplace trends and what people were thinking about in the workplace. And it was just astounding to us that the number one thing that people said across the board, 27 countries, that they were worried about becoming obsolete at work. So this is a really good thing to think about as you're heading into a weekend, because there's a lot you can do over the weekend and be prepared when the week comes up.
I love it. I love it. All right. So let's talk about this research. What did your research uncover as the number one workplace concern?
Well, people just feel that there's so much pressure to keep up with today's workloads that what they're really concerned about is preparing for tomorrow's challenges. And it's this sense that we all have this kind of looming sell-by date. So if you happen to look at the paper this week, you would have seen a story about AT&T where the CEO said to its workers, 280,000 of them, either adapt or else. Because there's so much technological change going on in the marketplace that businesses are feeling the pressure. So it's only natural that each of us would feel the pressure too and be a little concerned. Are our skills are our skills sufficient enough to be prepared for the future?
Interesting. And you know, what do you call it? Isn't it just, you know, what do you call it? Not that CEO to say, you know, either... your typical reaction, right? Just deal with it. You know, either adapt or get out or whatever. It really bodes up our morale when somebody talks to us like that, right?
Well, it is tough, but I think in many ways, Bert, it's meant as a wake-up call. And that's sort of how we have to take it. We can't take it as, this is a threat and you either have to get on board or get out. But I think it's really an opportunity for each of us to say, we need to do something differently. We need to realize that our skills do have a sell-by date, and we can do one of two things. You can put your head in the sand and just forget about it. And there are people there are always people who try to do that. But the other flip side is to really open up your thinking and to think about where you want to go beyond where you are now.
You know, and I like that what you said, that our skills have the sell-by date. We do constantly have to upgrade our skills. There is no getting around that. You certainly wouldn't want to go to a doctor who hasn't upgraded their skills or anything in the last 10 or 15 years.
Yes, and that's, and Bert, exactly, you hit the nail on the head, because what is happening is the rate of change is faster now than it's ever been before. We are really living in a time period where there's this disruptive sense of technology taking over so many different functions. And so if you just sit back and take a look at where the world of work has gone, you really can recognize that this rate of pace, this change, the rate of change and the speed of it is really real. It's a trend that's real. The time is now to recognize that you need to do what you can do to upgrade your skills.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's so funny, too, because every time – or I don't think they say it anymore, but originally when email started to come in and all these technologies started to integrate onto your phone, the cry was, hey, we're going to have more time. We're going to be able to manage more and be able to work less and all that other stuff. And it doesn't seem to be true at all. We are managing more, but we're not working any less.
No, you know, I look around and I see people who are looking at their devices all day long. Everywhere
yeah.
you go, you see people are engaged. It's not just during the workday, but it's during the evenings, it's during their weekends. So, you know, there is this sense that even if I want to upgrade my skills, even if I recognize that there's more I need to do to continue to stay relevant, where am I going to find the time to do it? And that is part of the pressure, I think, today for all of us, and part of recognizing how much jobs are being disrupted today. And technology is very disruptive. I think the World Economic Forum came out last month and said 5.1 million jobs are going to go away over the course of the next decade because of technology. And Oxford says it's 1 out of 2 jobs over the next decade. So whichever one of those is right, it is a big trend. And those people who take the time, you know, each of us who takes the time to recognize that the trend is real and now, will stand a better chance of being prepared for a future that is in many ways uncertain.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know what? It is amazing. I saw that by Oxford. Yeah, in a fairly short amount of time, it's a huge amount of workers will be displaced by technology, meaning that a robot of some sort will do the work for them. I mean, you look at Google. What is Google doing with these driverless taxi cabs that they're experimenting with? We see all the cars this year, really tail end of last year, started coming out with their automatic pilot. So more and more things are being done automatically. Airplanes, for instance, for years have had an autopilot. So, yes, you do need some humans in certain situations, but the future to me is clear that very soon you could jump into a car, a cab that has no human element to it. You know, you can now go to McDonald's and order directly from a kiosk, and so you've reduced the amount of human needed to service that customer. So you can see it. It's happening.
Yeah, and we're all right to be worried. It's powerful. It's a very powerful trend. It's not just factory jobs, too, Bert. That's an interesting thing. It's really sales. It's service jobs. It's at all different levels. So the skill gap is just increasing for the new jobs that are out there. So just at the same time, you see – you know, unemployment numbers were up in January. The layoff numbers, I think, were 75,000 in January. But at the same time, you see all sorts of opportunity in the marketplace. So I don't want to leave your listeners with this sense that it's this narrative
doom and gloom.
It really isn't. You know, there's so much excitement going on. I sort of like the idea of not having to drive myself.
I do too.
I think that could be very attractive. You know, you wouldn't be. You know, you could talk on the phone. You could do other things. But and what we're seeing is that there are plenty of opportunity in the marketplace. So things like in financial services, which has had so much change going on, at the same time there's all this robo advice that's coming out. It was an industry that was just $2 billion a year in 2013. Last year, $50 billion a year industry. But it's dramatically different than the old line, personal service that you saw in financial services. So it's really on each of us to be in charge of your own professional development. I think that's the number one takeaway from our book, is it's on you to find ways to really upgrade your skills. You cannot depend on your company. You can't depend on your manager or your colleagues at work. You really have to take care of looking out for yourself in terms of improving your skills.
I totally agree, and I like that, because it should be on us. Hold on one second. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back talking about stretch right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase Mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. We're speaking with Dr. Barbara Mystic about her new book, Stretch, How to Future-Proof Yourself for Tomorrow's Workplace. This is the sounding bell. You're being warned. This, to me, reminds me, Barbara, in the auto industry, remember when all the robots came in and just displaced thousands of workers? This is the same thing, except now we have people like you who are kind of ringing the bell to wake us up.
Absolutely. I just heard it on your commercial breaks. You know, there was just a conversation about how to scan your check and submit it electronically. Don't need to go
right
to the bank branch anymore. So if you start listening, I think that's one of the things that we found in the book, is people who take the time to really pay attention to what's happening in your industry, in your sector, can be better prepared. So it's really, there are lots of strategies, and I think that that's what we see, is lots of possibilities in the future to really learn new things. That's what you have to do, is find ways to ask why we do the things the way we do them now, and how can we do them differently. So really opening your thinking to a world beyond where you are now is a great way, a great first step to think about how the future is going to impact your particular position.
Yes. You know, it's, it's just amazing. And I know for a lot of people, they don't want to hear the fact that it's on them. But put yourself like this. If you are working for a company now and you're the owner or the manager or your supervisor discovered that you were upgrading your skills on your own, that can only be a good thing for you. I mean, isn't that the kind of person that you would want to say, yes, I like this person, this person's a go-getter, takes initiative, and this is the kind of person we need to keep?
Right. You know, there have been some recent surveys that Gallup has done that says that only 40% of the workforce is engaged at work. The other 60% of us are just sort of looking for that direct deposit experience at the end of every month. And that, you know, while that might help you pay your bills, it's those 40% of people who are engaged at work who are going to be most prepared when the unexpected happens. So it really is about just changing your mindset to not just how can I keep up today, but how can I really be prepared for tomorrow? And there are lots of ways to do that. We sort of talk about that in the book. One of them is getting experiences, getting a wide range of experiences, and being deliberate about those experiences. So, if you're a manager, think about when you give somebody an assignment, making it a developmental assignment as opposed to just giving them something to do and letting them figure out how to do it. Tell them what you expect that they're going to learn in doing that new activity. It just by telling people what you think they can learn, how they can expand their skills by doing an assignment, you've already opened a door for them to think more broadly about the assignment rather than just the bottom line of the work that you're doing. So
that's a
cute little tip, yes.
So let's talk about, the title of the book is Stretch. Why stretch?
because we believe that in order to stay relevant at work, we're all going to have to keep stretching.
I
think that's the bottom line. That's what we saw today. We had lots of other ideas for the title of the book, but it just came down to when you're comfortable to keep learning over time and to stay really be prepared when the unexpected happens. And it means that you're just constantly stretching. And if you can get comfortable with that rate of change, that's one of the things that's hard. You know, we talked about people not wanting to see change. And, you know, certainly, I saw it in the story about AT&T this weekend. You were talking about the auto industry. I grew up in Pittsburgh, as you mentioned. We had the steel industry was a great example. People got laid off. They went across the street to the local bar and waited to get called back to work. The difficulty is that they didn't get called back to work because the basic nature of the job that they're doing is so much different today. So it is having a sense that it's a different world, and if you can keep stretching, it can be very exciting. I think there's lots of possibilities. Possibilities are bigger in the future than the trade-offs that we're making.
Sure. Well, you know, and here's the deal. It's also a mental shift that you have to make. The example that you just gave about the workers going across the street and waiting at the bar to be called back, these are probably the same kind of people that felt that something was owed to them because maybe their father's father all worked at the same factory, right? And how dare they replace us with robots? And this is unfair. And you can believe that all you want, and maybe it's even true, but that doesn't put money back in your account. It doesn't put food on the table. It doesn't keep your house from being foreclosed on. And that's why the obligation, the responsibility, and the duty is yours to upgrade your skills or die.
Yeah, you just can't count on your boss today. You have to be prepared to take these actions yourself. And it is sort of broad-based. And if you think about it from the company perspective as well, they're experiencing the same disruption. I mean, this is not intentionally directed toward employees. It's really a disruption that's happening because of technology today. I think we're probably in the most disruptive job-changing market that we've ever been in. What was interesting to us as we did the book was over 80% of executives said that they're going to hire more people for just jobs and assignments, not for a full-time year-round job, but to do project work or an assignment here or, just a temporary piece of work. So I think we're seeing a big growth today in what they call the gig economy, and it's not about Hollywood, not about the Grammys. You know, it's really about just doing work in a much different way. And the problem with that is that the people who have the best skills are the ones that are going to be in demand when you're looking at work that is just assignment-based as opposed to full-time and year-round.
Yeah. No, I like it. I like it. Everybody be forewarned. The book, again, is called Stretch. The author, Barbara Mystic. Thank you so much for stopping by and sharing today. Looking forward to having you back again.
Oh, Bert, thank you so much. I'd love to come back and hope everybody has a great weekend and learn something new over the weekend.
I love it. I love it. Learn something new. Keep those skills updated from Barbara Mystic. I just love that. Mystic. All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And then we're going to be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest, Dr. Ed Gogek. Dr. Ed Gogek is an addiction psychiatrist who, in 30 years of practice, has treated over 10,000 addicts and alcoholics in mental health centers, private practice, prisons, homeless shelters, and many substance abuse treatment programs. His writings has appeared in New York Times, San Francisco Chronicle, Philadelphia Inquirer, and the USA Today, among other national media outlets. Dr. Ed Gogek, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
All right, let's talk about this. I just find this amazing. Over 10,000 addicts in 30 years. That seems like an enormous amount.
Well, you know, I see a couple new patients a day, so it adds up with time.
Sure.
I
was going to ask you about your thoughts on the legalization of marijuana, and what your thoughts are on this as an addiction specialist. I've heard a lot of people say that marijuana is not addictive. There's an old joke from Richard Pryor that he used to say, "Man, I've been smoking marijuana for 30 years. I'm not addicted yet."
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because most other addictive drugs, people admit that the drug is addictive, but they insist that they aren't. You know, alcoholics always say, "Well, yeah, I can show you a real alcoholic." But for some reason, with marijuana, works a little differently on the mind. So pot smokers tend to insist it's not addictive, but about 9 or 10% of all the people who smoke marijuana get addicted to it, and it means they have trouble stopping. They spend a lot of money. The biggest complaint I hear from people who are addicted to pot is that they spend all their money on it. Their money just goes to that, and also they tend to. It isn't that they spend all their time smoking pot, although a lot of them do, but they're always making people wait while they go get high. And then they get a lot of complaints from their friends and family about that.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you. I smoked dope when I was young and naive. And I stopped because to me, marijuana might be a great product to smoke or use right before you go to bed. I've not smoked it in many, many, many years. And I know that they've made a lot of different medicines with it. That it's just not the smoking of the marijuana anymore, but they're crushing it. You know, they're converting it to tablets. They're taking out the TCH or whatever that gives you that buzz. But you know, marijuana is a great product if you really want to get nothing done. You know, and I'm not advocating drugs at all. But, you get high and then you do nothing.
Right. The big problem with legalization is teenage use. And I know people say, well, it's an adult choice, but almost everybody who smokes pot, same as with tobacco, same as with alcohol, started as a teenager. And marijuana in particular, I did. I was a daily pot smoker as a teenager. Unfortunately, I was like, I quit at 19. But, it had some effect on me. And we now know that the earlier you start, the more it has an effect on the brain. And a lot of this effect is permanent. And we've got a couple million teenagers who are smoking marijuana regularly, and it is going to have a permanent effect. We find that they're not as good at strategic thinking. They don't plan as well. The memory isn't quite as good. And for the really heavy users, the IQ is lower, and it does not reverse itself. You know, if you start smoking pot as an adult and you quit, everything goes back to normal. If you start smoking pot as a teenager and you quit, you don't go back to normal. And that's my biggest concern with legalization is the number of teenagers who are using it.
Sure, sure. No, absolutely. You know, one of my favorite all-time drug prevention commercials against marijuana, this is back, I want to say, in the 80s, maybe early 90s. You have this guy, and he's talking about how marijuana hasn't affected him, he's still the same and all this other stuff. And you can tell this guy is probably in his mid-20s, maybe early 30s. He's an older gentleman. And all of a sudden, his mother calls out to him and, it's time to take out the garbage.
Yeah.
It's so funny because that to me was a great explanation. There is that again, marijuana to me, and it just seems like one of those drugs that really saps your motivation to do anything. Let me ask you this. They have called marijuana a gateway drug. What's your take on that? Again, is that hype? Do you find that within your 30 years of practice to be a real thing?
Well, I'm going to tell you about the research. And the gateway is absolutely true for teenagers. It's not true for adults. And it's the same thing. Teenagers who smoke pot are more likely to get addicted. And the reason is the teenage brain is actually forming, and it becomes really good at whatever you do. So if you're playing the piano as a teenager, you get really good at it. Unfortunately, if you're using an addictive drug, your brain forms around learning how to enjoy addictive drugs. So people who smoke pot as teenagers are seven times as likely, at least according to this one pretty good study, seven times as likely to use hard drugs as an adult. So it definitely, the gateway effect is very real. It's not just because of who you're hanging out with. It's because it permanently alters the way the brain works and what you will like as an adult. And, you know, that thing about work, what they found about teenage users is they earn less money as adults. And that's just pretty generally true. They're less likely to go to college. Now, part of that is because the people who smoke pot are less likely to want to go to college to begin with. But even when they control for that, the people who planned on going to college become less likely. The people who go to college are more likely to drop out. High school students who smoke pot are more likely to drop out. And as far as work, I mean, this was greeted with laughter. There's research that shows that pot smokers are less committed to work. They really are. There's just less of an interest in work altogether.
Yeah. And you know what? Again, from my experience, I believe that. I remember, again, I'm probably beating the horse to death now. I just didn't want to do anything. You know, and I really hope that everybody heard what you said about the fact that the teenage mind is still forming, and all this, you know, some of these things are so impressionable. They stay with us for such a long time. I like the analogy that if you're a teenager and you're playing the piano or whatever instrument, you're most likely to get pretty good at it. You know, we all know that kids pick up a language such as music or an actual language or whatever fairly quick. Why? Because that's what they're good at. But as adults, man, we can barely, you know, learn how to, you know, retie our shoes. We're a little bit, you know, I don't know, when it comes to learning new things or complex new things, it seems to be a little bit tougher. Let's talk about the old argument. Alcohol is legal. Why can't marijuana be legal?
Yeah, it's kind of a silly argument. Alcohol does so much harm that it's really a good argument for why we don't want to legalize another drug. You know, alcohol is only legal because it has widespread use. It was used by society since before recorded history. And you know, pot smokers have this real persecution sense. And when you hear them talk, it's almost as if we all sat down and decided which drugs to make legal and which ones to make illegal. And marijuana was out of the room at the time, and we picked on them. And that's not the reason. What happened is that in the beginning of the 20th century, they started realizing, you know, and this happened across the world, but it happened in our country, is states started seeing people having problems with drugs, and the states started making them illegal. So a lot of the states made marijuana illegal in the 1910s and 20s, or the 20s and 30s. And then in 1937, the whole country made it illegal. And they were doing the same thing with opiates, with cocaine, the drugs that were sold in patent medicines, and that people were getting addicted to. They made them illegal. And basically, what we've done is any new addictive drug that comes along, we make it illegal. So spice and bath salts come along, we make them illegal almost immediately. Crystal meth, make it illegal. If alcohol were invented today, we would make it illegal. So the argument of comparing it to alcohol is, you know, from a stoner's point of view, it makes sense because they feel that they're so put upon. But for the rest of society, it's like, if we can keep people from using a drug, we should do it. And, you know, if a drug isn't being used very often, it's not widespread use, you can make it illegal and you can pretty much prevent use. I mean, bath salts, you know, I just saw a patient the other day told me he used to do, actually did spice. He was doing spice all the time. And then when it became illegal, he couldn't find it anymore. So he quit using it. And that's the reason for making a drug illegal. Illegal drugs are always, always, always much harder for people to get than legal ones. And what we've seen is anytime marijuana laws have been loosened, either with medical marijuana or with decriminalization, or now in Colorado with legalization, teenage use goes up. Colorado now has the highest rate of teenage use in the country, and it didn't used to. It used to be in the middle of the pack, and it went up because they had a very loose medical marijuana law, and then it still wasn't number one. And then after legalization, the first year pot was legalized, Colorado zipped up to number one in the country.
Right, and it's going to be interesting how these teens are going to impact the state's bottom line, because you could just, you know, looking at your research, you could see a bunch of teens that have now, for the most part, can smoke marijuana whenever they want, which means a lot of them are, a lot less of them are going to finish high school, a lot less of them are going to finish college, which means a lot more of them are going to be dependent on some kind of subsidy from the government.
Yeah, and they'll probably be employed. I mean, I work in a jail right now, so, and I see a lot of, you know, it's mostly drug users, and I see a lot of people who smoke pot. They do other drugs as well. They often do alcohol as well. But the problem with a lot of this is it's subtle, and if you don't really study it, you won't see it. So I could actually look at, you know, I could look at myself, and I could say, you know, I'm a doctor. I'm pretty good. But would I have been better if I didn't smoke pot as a teenager? And then, you know, the whole thing about lowering IQ is the really heavy users, it's like 8 points difference. And that's the difference between a white collar job or a food service job, or, you know, doing well at work or never getting a promotion. And somebody who doesn't get a promotion, they don't think, gosh, I shouldn't have smoked pot when I was a teenager. They just don't think about why that is. And so a lot of the harm is really going to go unnoticed. And unless we really study it carefully, we won't really notice what it's doing. And, you know, it's the same thing with other drugs and crime. You know, people are very shocked to find out how much of crime is caused by alcohol, and it's simply because it's not reported in the news. But, you know, alcohol is a major cause of crime, and so are the other drugs. That's really the cause of most of the crime in this country. People don't know it just because it's not reported that way. So it's going to be the same thing with marijuana.
And the other thing that you mentioned earlier is that alcohol, because it got a foothold, and most likely it got a foothold because of political reasons, right? But either way, it's been around long enough now that it's a very strong political machine. If all of a sudden you and I attempted to, shut down the alcohol industry and make it, illegal, we would be overwhelmed not only by consumers but by the associations that want to keep that industry alive.
I mean, that's true.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we could if the country decided to. We could make tobacco illegal, and that would probably work. And the reason it would work is that most of the people who smoke are addicted. There's very few smokers. I mean, there's a lot of people who smoke occasional cigarettes, but for the most part, people who really, you know, are attached to the cigarettes are addicted to it. Most smokers have tried to quit, plan on trying again. If we held a referendum and just let smokers vote, they would probably smoke to make it illegal. They would vote to make it illegal. So we could probably ban tobacco. The problem with alcohol, and most alcohol goes to substance abuse, it goes to alcoholism or binge drinking, but there are tens of millions of people in this country who are genuine social drinkers. Alcohol actually has two ways. There's actually genuine social use, and there's abusive use. And the reason it's legal is that social use. There's just a lot of people for whom it's not a drug of abuse, and they like it, and that's really the problem with, you know, alcohol is the one drug that's very hard to make illegal. Almost any other drug you could prevent use by making it illegal, and it would work.
Gotcha. Dr. Ed Gogick, thank you so much for stopping by. Love to have you back again. Talk more about marijuana and its addictiveness. Dr. Gogick, thank you so much for stopping by.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You bet. Good stuff there. Interesting stuff, too. You know, marijuana, you know, it's kind of popular. Most people think it's a non-issue, right? It's not that big of a deal. It might be a really big deal. And I really specifically believe with Dr. Gogick there about getting it out of the, you know, making it hard for our teenage our young people to get a hold of it. Why? Because it does mess up the brain. And like a lot of things, we're as adults, our chemistry changes. Our mind is completely formed, and so it doesn't harm us as much.
Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.